with our most testicular episode ever.
Testicular, wow. Do you use that as an adjective? I don't...
Yeah.
I mean, you just did.
So I did, so it's
very
there.
Testicular.
And it's...
I like this stuff.
Sorry. Testiculars?
You can't...
I love playing with this stuff.
You can't talk about that.
Yeah,
it's from the other episode.
It's all sticky and stuff.
Womp womp.
So
sorry, I'm getting testy.
Woo! Right out of the gate with the
yikes! Right in the plums.
I mean, you set him up. You said you
I
told
really,
him.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Okay, so this is the Monster in a Glass podcast where we take cocktails and look at their origins and then look at the history that surrounds them. And boy, do we have a doozy this time!
I'm not gonna make it. Disclaimer.
We're just gonna have to have like a ticker every time a pun is made.
Can we get like the equivalent of a swear
ding,
jar?
Yeah.
It's gonna cost him a quarter
makes
every
so
time.
Much money.
Wait,
on this
I got
episode.
It. Let's make it a drinking game.
Oh God,
what could go wrong?
You're all gonna die.
So
let's just call 911 and just be like alcohol poisoning.
I was listening to this podcast.
No, that's awesome.
I'm joined here by our Black Liver Project researcher, Mr. Jay Cruz.
Hello.
And we're also here with my good friend, Jeremy, the Hackmaster Phelps.
Present.
And we're also here with another one of my good friends.
He's broken.
Roll the tape.
Professor Mick the Bone Doctor Layman.
I do profess.
And how. The reason this episode is going to be so fun is because this is the monkey gland.
Shut up!
How it was made.
This is about almost like a Frankenstein doctor situation.
That's even worse.
Became the focus of a cocktail.
Okay, I'm not...
It is kind of Frankenstein like that. I didn't think of that, but
you're just like taking parts and So anyway, what did you discover about the monkey gland cocktail?
Well, one, it's a disgusting sounding drink. I mean, like, out of all the drinks that we've covered with
this one
weird names, this is one that I would feel disgusted about ordering in a bar.
I would rather drink the monkey's paw than the monkey's gland.
Yeah, I totally would.
Gland in itself, gland. Just order a gland.
Can I have a
see
gland,
what you
please?
Fucking get.
I'd like a gland, please. Yeah.
Would you want
surprise
like a monkey
me?
Gland? I don't know. Any animal, just
any gland.
I'm already
going to
throw up. So just
can you just squeeze it out? I want the gland.
It's for virility.
Well, yeah, and if you go into a bar, like if we walk out of here right now and walk to a bar in Chicago and ask for a monkey gland, I assume we'll be thrown out.
You're gonna get your ass kicked.
Just summarily dismissed,
slapped.
Yeah,
depends on who.
Well,
you
I
ask.
Hope so. I mean, I would deserve it.
Or that one bar where you really regret it.
I would just call it monkey balls. Can I get some monkey balls? It just sounds disgusting.
Gland is so bad.
The recipe for this drink is half gin, half orange juice, 1 teaspoon of grenadine. Okay.
This sounds delicious.
And then 1 dash of absinthe.
Whoops.
So
fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not?
How do we ruin this drink? Put something really expensive in it.
Just and it tastes like fucking licorice. Whoops.
Yeah. And by the way, absinthe, a little bit, a dash, goes a long way.
All the way. It goes all the way.
It will take over that whole drink.
Especially if this drink is old, like with the old wormwood and all that. Yeah.
I don't see the orange juice and the black licorice working together very well.
No, it helps you trip out, though.
It tastes like the fucking apocalypse, man. Like, what is that? Like...
When you drink the orange juice with the psilocybin, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get that.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I really almost thought I was making a mistake. Like, and as I was typing it out, I was like, no, that can't be absinthe in there, too.
Yep. Oh, my gosh.
But this was...
That's the gland part.
This was
but
one
the
part of
those... Squeeze the absinthe tree gently.
Just a little squirt.
Just a squirt.
Oh,
it's horrible. You win.
That's like that's like doing something that's fun and then going to confession, right? But you just yeah. put it in one cocktail.
There you go. Yeah.
See, they could have called it the confessional one. It probably would have been. I would have been like, oh, I know.
Yeah, I know. That's right? unnecessarily rapey.
Yeah, it sounds.
There's a tinge of rapiness to it.
A lot of these
guys. I'm Catholic. That's allowed.
Right. We're all making the sign of the cross right now. That's fine. Looking into this one, it was one of those great moments where I looked it up and I, you know, went and just started looking in cocktail books. And then I was like, oh, here we go. Everything I want. The name, who created it, why it was called, what it was called. I was like, thank you, Don.
Like, wow.
So Harry McElhenney, his book, Harry of Saros, ABC of Mixing Cocktails. In 1923, he calls it the monkey's gland cocktail. So that everybody else calls it the monkey gland, he calls it the monkey's gland.
Interesting.
The gland of the monkey.
Yeah, right.
The recipe is, as we said, one dash of absinthe, one teaspoonful of grenadine, half orange juice, half Gordon gin. And he says underneath, invented by the author and deriving its name from the Voronov's experiments in rejuvenation. So we'll get into that a little bit later.
Wow, but that sounds cool.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, oh, great. So, you know, this is good. I don't really have to look that much harder for the origin since it was told to me. But as I was looking around and doing different research, I kept coming across people pointing to a Washington Post article from 1923 that attributes the drink to a Frank at the Ritz.
Frank Einstein?
Frank.
Yes. With the Voronov experiment? Yeah.
The title of the article is called New Cocktail in Paris is the Monkey Gland, and it's from April 28th, 1923, and it says, preparing for a busy tourist season, Frank, the noted concoctor behind the bar of the Ritz...
Did you say 1923?
1923.
Oh my god, okay.
...has devised a new series of powerful cocktails, favorite of which is known as the Monkey Gland. Okay, so here we're going to do a callback to the French 75, and I'm going to do this because I cannot pronounce this, and it's just going to come out sounding crazy. Like Frank's Soixante Quinzy.
That was so crazy.
What?
Try again, please.
Soixante.
Jeremy, please, with the French. Yeah.
Let's do the...
En français.
Let's do... Let Mr. Marceau explain how
it's pronounced Marcou. Jeremy, your turn. Can you read that for...
Gaelic Irishman words
75 in French.
75.
Where?
Oh, the word Soixante, like. You have to spit out.
Soixante Quinze. I don't know.
There's a
say it, Cam.
My French is terrible.
Mr. Marcou.
Soixante Quinze.
Sure.
It's if you listen to the French 75 episode, Rachel said that. Perfectly,
because
she responded to your butchery of the.
But that's, the first I think time. That's pretty much how I pronounced it when we did the French 75. But I looked at it, I was like, so sounds like Quince.
Yikes.
That means 75.
So it's sans Quince.
In Francais.
So it's sans Quince. So there's that, and then the Gloom Razor and the Monkey Glaze. I want to try the Gloom Razor.
That sounds great, doesn't it?
The Monkey Gland requires...
The Monkey Glazer?
No.
That's the donut version. You get that with your coffee and...
That's so gross. So gross.
And a Hustler Mag.
So gross.
Free pack of cigarettes included, yeah.
Oh, I want out of this nightmare. Oh,
I need to wash my brain now.
Wow. Gross.
No, he's talking about these drinks that this guy, Frank, creates. So this, let's just say it's 75 so we can move past that. The Gloom Razor and the Monkey Gland, which requires absinthe to be perfect, but its amateurs have found anise a substitute with a sufficient kick. So he's attributing it to this guy, Frank. And they says, for the benefit of friends over in America who have not exhausted their cellars, here's the recipe. Half and half gin and orange juice, a dash of absinthe, and a dash of raspberry or other sweet juice. Mm. So basically grenadine. Mix well with ice, serve only with a doctor handy.
What?
That's awesome.
Yeah, because you're going to fucking throw up.
Show over. That's fantastic.
Inside with half an hour. They were really cheeky in the newspaper articles. Inside half an hour the other day, Frank purveyed 40 of these to the exclusion of Manhattans and martinis. So that's 1923.
And everyone made babies.
Right. And so I was like, wait a minute.
My, everyone's so virile.
So virile.
It's like, going around.
My Must be the absinthe.
It must be.
So they kept pointing to this Frank, and I was like, well, okay, so now we have Harry McElhenney claiming it in the cocktail book, and the reporter saying, no, Frank Meyer did it. Frank Meyer was who they were referring to, who was the bartender at the Ritz in Paris. And he published a book in 1936 called The Artistry of Mixing Drinks, which we've used before for other episodes. So here's the problem with the article that I noticed right away. It's published in 1923, which is the same year that Harry publishes his book. So the drink would have already been invented at the point. Now, this could be a simple mistake. Maybe the reporter assumed that Frank Meyer invented it because he was slinging him. I also found two newspaper articles that noted the drink, the monkey gland, in 1921. So one was from the Times of India and one was from the Cincinnati Inquirer. The one from the Times of India says...
It got around.
Yeah.
Clearly. I mean, it made it to Cincinnati. So.
It's holy shit.
Man, it got everywhere. India, it Cincinnati. Made it. I can't believe it got to Cincinnati.
That's how you know.
I don't know. I mean, as near as I can tell, women still can't vote in Cincinnati.
I apologize. 2017. To Cincinnati. I'm sorry. I don't even know where Cincinnati is.
Where is that?
One of those vowel states.
It's on a river, I think.
Yeah. It says, one London club is a printed list of over 60 varieties. They include such names as Angel's Kiss, American Beauty, Bosom Caresser, Monkey Gland, Soul Kiss, Maiden's Blush. All these sound, I almost said Maiden's Bush, but it's Blush.
It's erotic.
The other article says an outcry also is made that my lady is growing too fond of the outlandish drink that girls in their somethings no longer limit themselves.
What is it? I think I want to know what the something
their
is.
Their somethings?
You need...
Please.
Tell us about the somethings. Say the girl's somethings.
No,
and let that hang.
The print of this newspaper got cut off. Yeah, it's no longer in their something. No longer limit their alcoholic allowance to a glass of sherry, but ask their gentlemen companions to order for them a Bronx or a monkey gland before and after the food. I was like,
no,
what is
lady.
He saying? He's pissed at, like, he's got to pay for the woman's drinks. He's like, shit, a glass of sherry costs like 6 cents. Now I got to buy her a monkey gland before and after dinner. What the hell?
Oh. That's asshole. A high society lady.
That's Cincinnati, though, so, you know.
Well, there's that. They love the gland.
There's also... So those are 1921. So clearly it existed before Frank Meyer. Also, an article about...
In a big way.
There was an article about the monkey's gland showing up at a woman's club bar in London in 1919. So the title is, Monkey Glands and Pussyfoot Are New Drinks.
Are you fucking serious? Okay, I'm leaving because this is I'm done.
You almost heard a Monster in a Glass spit take.
Yeah, you just broke me. Thank you. I'm gone. Thank you.
This one was just for you, Mickey. I was researching and I'm like, Mickey's gonna love this.
Yeah,
I just need to find more things that talk about balls.
This one writes itself.
You know, pussies.
Yep, it's done.
But they talk about a women's club that was serving the monkey's gland in 1919. Also the Gloom Razor. I gotta find out what that drink
is. Really cool. If I want a drink, that's it.
The Rune Glazer.
Exactly. Exactly.
Can I get two monkeys?
That's a Scandinavian metal album.
Yeah.
The Rune Glazer.
Everything is coded.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has free healthcare.
Design that album.
In a perfect...
I want to see it. It's guys in like the corpse paint and just like Rune Glazer. Everything is coated.
Everything.
We've had our colonoscopies.
Coat the world.
Coat the world and then burn it.
Inseminate the world.
I think that's actually been done.
So based on previous research we've done, that we know that Harry was at Ciro's in London around 1919. And that was after he got out of the military in 1918. And then I came across an article. So I did all this, and then I came across an article in the Daily Beast called Frank Meyer, the Paris Ritz Mysterious Bartender Spy. That's going to have to be a whole other podcast, I'm guessing.
Right, I bet.
So in this article, they point out that Meyer didn't start working for the Ritz until 1921. So clearly he did not invent this drink. He was in America before that. And then,
he picked it up in Cincinnati.
That's totally where
you're I think they prefer Cincinnati. All those listeners, all two of them. Sorry. Please listen. Don't listen to this asshole.
We're in trouble.
Yeah.
There's only two people that live in Cincinnati. Yeah. I don't think they both that are aware to this that podcast. There's a podcast. I don't think they know what podcasts are.
No, they don't have the internet there. It's fine. Don't worry.
Damn, we just...
What the hell is the goddamn internet?
We just tripled down on insulting Cincinnati.
Yeah, look, I'm a Cardinals fan, so this is, like, I have to do this.
That's funny.
I found his obituary from 1947, and it says, Frank Meyer, 60, barman at the Hotel Ritz since 1921, died yesterday at his home here. You know, these articles are pointing to him being starting at the Ritz in 1921. Then I found an article, it wasn't really an article, it was a Q&A with David Wondrich. It kind of backing up all that I just said. And the question was, who created the Monkey Clan, Frank Meyer or Harry McElhenney? And he said Frank Meyer and Harry McElhenney were the twin pillars of Paris barkeeping in the 1920s and 30s. Meyer at the Ritz Bar, McElhenney at Harry's New York Bar. I'd hate to have to choose between them. In this, however, we must award the Monkey Clan named after a quack cure for lack of virility. And then he says, don't ask, to Harry. And not don't only ask. Because he claimed it in his 1922 ABC of Mixing Cocktails, but also because when it is first noticed in 1919, it is at Ciro's Club in London. I couldn't find that information, but I'll take his word for it. I mean, we found that other article that from 1919 saying they were drinking Monkey Lands.
Yeah.
And because at the time, Meyer, newly discharged from the French Foreign Legion, had not yet begun working at the Ritz. So all the things that I just said was backed up by his research as well. So based on all this, I think it's pretty clear to say that Harry created it. I would like to point out that beyond that one article in the Washington Post, I'm not sure that there's any other claims by Meyer. That was the weird thing to me. It was like, I didn't find anything where Frank Meyer was like, I totally created this ball drink. It was just, I think it was that one article where the reporter was saying he did, and it didn't even seem like in that article that Frank Meyer was claiming that he did. I think it was the reporter's interpretation of what was happening. Hmm. So
that's what, yeah, okay.
So
I totally believe
it's
that.
Not one of these like, well, these two bartenders went head to head over this drink. Right. I think it was just like, people were like, no, Frank Meyer invented it. It's like, you just didn't read the fucking article. you saw a headline and you're like, good
it's
enough
just,
for me.
It's just that the rich people at the Ritz were ordering monkey glands, and that's where it was more attractive to make the story.
Sure, exactly.
Than Harry's bar.
Mm-hmm. So then after I did all that, I was like, good, we know where it came from, we know who invented it, and then I was like, well, nobody would really want to order this drink. I mean, who would actually want to?
It sounds like it's popular with women, which I think is weird.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what...
That's all the articles seem. It was like a women's club, and then that guy was saying, like, well, I gotta buy my ladies.
First of all, with the ingredients, it's sounding kind of... And the nature of, you know, the name and everything, it's sounding kind of like a Corpse Reviver.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, so, like... You know, it's going to pick you up, and that's kind of along the lines of what the background is. But with the added twist of being associated with women, and I'm curious if women were actually ordering it or if men were saying they should order it.
They should, yeah.
Because of the Brass background.
Monkey?
Maybe both, right? I mean, because as a name, it's a little transgressive. Right, so maybe it could go both ways, right? Like, it could be the lady saying, oh, I would like a monkey gland, giggle, giggle, giggle.
Mm-hmm.
Or a man saying, oh, you should get a monkey gland, like elbow, elbow, elbow.
Right. Yeah,
right. Either like, way, we're going to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like she ordered a monkey gland. I think she's ready.
It's time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like
she must be.
I might get to see her ankles.
That's the clue
yeah.
that we're going to go back to her place.
Yeah. When she orders a monkey gland. It was plenty risque.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm guessing that if they were serving it at a women's club, that you might be right. That it seemed like, at least from what I was seeing, that it might be both. That women were ordering it and then also. Yeah,
is it,
I mean,
is it like
complaining
the,
about it?
Is it the penis lollipop at a bachelorette party? Is that what this is?
Maybe.
I've never seen one of those, but since you obviously have.
I think we're going to need to hear more about a penis.
Yeah, you just did, like, confounded Jeremy.
Oh,
like,
geez.
What did you just say? Penis lollipop?
But I think it's a libation. It allows you to go there, right?
But
is that what you're saying?
It's that connection between, it's like women can use it to be... What, risque or whatever, you know, it's safe and funny and
leads
sexual.
To sex, yeah.
you know, especially in a ladies club, it's like women at a Chippendales. It's like they're not going to be threatened there. It's all women.
It's been a long time since you had the 8-pack. I know it's at 4 now since you danced. But all those years of recon have paid off for this podcast.
Yeah.
I mean, that might be that it was like a kind of a tongue-in-cheek drink that...
Cutesy-tootsy, let's get to bed.
I mean, yeah, I couldn't remember. I was like, who the fuck would order... One, it sounds disgusting. The ingredients sound disgusting. Who would want to order this drink? I did find it here and there, though, like showing up in recipe books. One of the first places I found it was in an article about Harry Craddock, the writer of the Savoy Cocktail Book. And it was in an Atlanta Constitution article in 1926, which he lists the monkey gland as one of the drinks he serves. He was like, and it cost 2 shillings and 6 pence. So another newspaper article from the New York Times in 1930 notes that the monkey gland was an English cocktail, which based on when Harry would have created it kind of technically was, because Ciro's was in London.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Prohibition, you get the usual suspects. You get our man PGD.
That's right.
And he is followed by a couple others from the 30s that basically have the same recipe with, you know, one had 3 dashes of absinthe, and I was like, shit, you are just God. Like,
zut
just, yeah, no way, dude.
That's way just more than a monkey's
drink
gland.
Drink the absinthe and don't add the other ingredients if you're going to do that.
That's a monkey's uncle right there.
And also less orange juice. It was 2/3 gin, 1/3 orange juice, 3 dashes absinthe, 3 dashes grenadine.
That's a mess.
Yeah, it sounds disgusting.
That's just licorice juice.
So it wasn't licorice juice. God, gross.
I mean, with the 3 dashes of absinthe, that's
you know,
all I taste is anise.
No.
Jokes.
So much self-control. So much.
Let it loose.
I don't. I just controlled it. I just so controlled it.
I bought a bottle of absinthe recently, and I was like, I'm going to make a Sazerac. I mean, I did what they said, you know, like, just swish it around the glass. And then I made the drink, and I was like,
you can handle it, though. Yeah, you
like,
couldn't
I don't taste
it.
Anything but absinthe.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't even have any in it. I just...
What was it with?
Rye and Peychaud's bitters, but it was like I couldn't taste anything but absinthe. And so
it's very
putting
strong.
3 dashes of absinthe in orange juice, holy
shouldn't
shit.
Change it.
With orange juice, for God's sake, that's like eating something after you brush your teeth.
Right.
Yeah. it's what much like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not going to get better.
Yeah.
So. Why the monkey gland? Why is it called the monkey gland? So we touched on it. I mean, Harry gives us the exact reason.
Because he was a monkey milker.
Because
it's the dark web. And it's fine.
Because Harry was having an off night, and he was like, ugh. I don't fucking know. I don't care. Whatever. Yeah. Absinthe. Give me that absinthe. What else? Orange juice. Pass the orange juice.
We're going
crazy tonight. He named it after Voronoff's experiments in rejuvenation. But then I was like, but why? Like, why these ingredients?
Oh,
so, like, I had to either guess, like, either it was something that he felt would rejuvenate you or would turn you into a monkey. I don't know. I have a feeling if I drank this,
what are
I
the experience? What are the experiments? What are the experiments?
Well, that's or what not. Cam's going to talk
okay,
about.
Okay, you're going to talk about that?
Yeah, so...
Because I got to know, like, this is getting weird.
Yeah, okay, so
it's going to get real.
Yeah, so really weird.
There was this guy, Sergei Voronoff. He was born in Russia in 1866. He moved to France at 18 and studied medicine there. And so he was eventually just a French citizen. He just lived in France, and that's where he did his work. And
remember the times when you could just be a doctor?
Yeah, like because
like,
I said
16
so.
Or
yeah.
18, you're
because
like,
I was like,
I
I'm cutting things up. I'm a doctor. Yeah. I cut things up.
You're like, sure. Did you read a book on medicine?
So
oh
gross.
Yeah, no, I read the book on medicine.
You're well,
like,
I'm a doctor.
I heard of doctors once.
What do you? Can you take a look at this then?
Can you look at this monkey gland?
How does my monkey gland look?
Not good.
Not good. It's festering.
You should get that checked out by a professional.
Should I milk it, Doug?
That's
it. Podcast over. We got there. Did you see I, Frankenstein? Because that's what it reminds me of. It was
no.
a terrible movie with Daniel Radcliffe and somebody else.
No.
But they reanimate a chimp corpse. I'm imagining that's what this was like. That time where they were like, I'm gonna shock some dead flesh.
It was the late 19th century.
Let's shock some stuff.
Or more like, well, this is a different time period.
Okay, well, it was gross. All I'm saying is that movie was horribly gross. So there was a whole sequence with the reanimated monkey champ thing. It was gross. And he was like, really gross. Anyways, go ahead.
I read his book, and I thought it was really interesting because he was a hardcore scientist of the time period. Like
scientific method scientist?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. He detailed his processes and what he discovered. So his focus was on rejuvenation. He was really interested in having people live longer lives. The book he wrote in like, I think it was 1917. It was called Life, A Means of Restoring Vital Energy and Prolonging Life. So that was his focus of his study. And he discovered that the work that the glands did in the body was probably the best place to look for restoring life. The very beginning of his book, he details all of these people who've lived to like 140, 165... He laid out all of these different people, and like I was kind of blown away by his claims.
Because here's an interesting thing, and this is something that I just actually recently heard, because this still happens today, where there are people that are like, well, this guy in Korea is 130 years old, and when they actually like sat down and talked to the people, it really what it came down to was they were definitely not 130 years old. But at a certain point, like, the way that they track age over their life is different. He's old. He's probably 80 or so. It's something to do with the way that they tracked ages or, like, how they thought of age. It's like, well, you're just an old guy, so you're, like... So they're not at all. They're like, oh, yeah, no. Nobody lives that long. You can't. Like, the oldest person lives, like, to 112. And they're basically, like, a mummy by the time.
Yeah.
And certainly he not was, in 1917.
He was making...
Yeah, like, you were old when you were 18.
18, right. Didn't die?
He was making the claims that people could live that long, and all we had to do was, like, fiddle with the biology.
Fiddle with the gland.
And he thought...
Milk the gland.
His view on the science was that white blood cells, though they attack viruses and bacteria that go into your bloodstream, they also attack the organs after a while. And so, like, it breaks down the material of the organs.
That's how we age?
Yeah.
That was his idea?
Yeah. The thyroid glands, or glands in general.
He was all about glands.
Yeah.
And he knew what was going on.
He was focusing on the glands and what they did. Because if you remove a thyroid gland, you see that a person can survive without a thyroid gland, but... Their hair gets brittle, their skin gets slack and pale, and it's almost like they go through...
They're aging.
...a deterioration. They're aging. So he's looking at glands and seeing those as ways of being the solution to much longer lives. Okay, first of all, his first foray into it was in 1889. He injected himself with extracts of ground-up dog and guinea pig testicles.
Okay. Okay. That's a pretty aggressive start.
Okay. I know. Okay. It's like, if we just grind this stuff up and, like, you know.
I love the internet, but that shit's crazy. Like, that actually happened back in the day. And people were like, let's see.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Like, how do you
fix this? Dog and guinea pig?
Sure.
That is not something that happens sober.
I bet
he had a reason. I bet he had a reason. It just doesn't make sense to us now.
What is it? How many guinea pigs do you have to accost?
That's
before,
a lot of testicles.
Yeah. I mean, these are not large animals.
No, they're tiny.
I don't. Maybe he only needed two.
Yeah. We need more guinea pig testicles.
For humans. I know
that's
what guinea pigs.
The ratio. No.
Yeah. I mean, there's a story about my mother-in-law and guinea pig genitals, and it's just fucking weird. And it takes a lot before you could grind them up, and. It's fucked up.
Plus, they shit everywhere. Guinea pigs just shit, like, constantly. And, like, you have to be dedicated to, like, try to snip off some balls off an animal that just is literally shits move it makes.
This guy, he did it. He did it.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Okay, we're talking about it. This cat, like, restrained some guinea pigs and chopped off their nuts.
And then ground them up.
And ground them up.
Yeah.
And then injected them into his body.
And at the end, he did the questioning finger and said, "For science!"
Yeah.
Okay, but good for him for doing it to himself instead of like...
Other people.
Hey, you're right.
I'm going to go dose.
I'm going to pay you a buck to, to sit in this chair.
Johnny Irishman.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that to do that to yourself takes balls.
That was fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, so in 1917, he married into money and got a lot of money to do research. And he did research on goats and sheep. What he was doing...
The glandiest of all glands.
Yeah, he was removing thyroids. And this is the thing that blew me away, was that he was removing thyroids and transplanting them into other animals. He was removing testicles. He was taking testicles off of male animals and transplanting them to female animals.
Just can't do this anymore.
He was taking old rams and like taking young like testicles from young goats and sheep and putting them into the old
Viagra
ones.
Like that's what he's
doing. That's what he's doing. Yeah. That's totally what he's doing.
I get that one. Why would you take ram's testicles and shove them into a female?
Well, just like, because
you're like, I don't know, I just like, because we're just throwing shit at the wall.
Well, it sounds like he needed more rams for his experiment.
I'll just glue
he ran out he of rams. I got a bunch of ooze, and here's what we're gonna do.
He was inserting them, he was just gluing them. He's like, good enough, this is a ram now.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
Nobody's gonna know.
He was checking on how the glands, when added to the biological
system,
what
would they do?
Yeah, would it create horns? When he would put new testicles into an old ram, the horns would grow again.
The beauty of this is like scientific method. That's what this is.
And he was
seeing stuff. Like, does this do stuff, and write it down.
He was also doing surgeries on humans where children who
who weren't
that's unethical and terribly unmoral, Jay. Asshole.
Big bald children of the future.
I don't know, maybe he was in a cosmetic surgery. I mean, like, maybe it was like all for,
they live on the moon.
Where he thought that thyroid glands were failing, he was transplanting them from either dead people or from family members.
Okay, so
you're telling me this guy didn't live in Transylvania in a giant fucking castle?
No, he
lived didn't make a fucking movie about this guy called Frankenstein? Yeah, this was the guy.
No, this was after Frankenstein.
What was his favorite drink? The monkey gland?
Like, if somebody tried to serve him a monkey gland, he was like, that drink sounds disgusting.
Yeah. I've already done that several times in a lab.
What's amazing to me is that in 1917, they were doing surgeries to transplant glands into people and getting positive results. So what kind of tubes connect your glands? How do you hook these things up to make them work in a human body? Now I can see that being with laser scalpels and ways of suturing, you know, veins and stuff. How is he doing this shit in 1917? That's what blows me away. Maybe I'm stupid because I don't understand.
Well, I think at that point in time, for a long time before that, they were already cutting up bodies so much and just to look at them and just be like, how does this thing fucking connect to this thing?
Look at this tube. I'm going to sew it to that tube.
But, right, like, oh, what happens when we do this? And it's like, okay, so don't do that. And how do we connect it back?
What do you think?
I don't even know where your thyroid is.
It's mechanics, and I think that's fascinating, right? Is that what you're saying?
It's like
screwing one thing into another thing, and what the fuck?
Yeah, and they've got giant needles, right? Like, and they're sewing together these gauzy like tubes. Yeah. How are they doing that?
Well, I assume that a lot of people died.
A lot, and they were mostly crazy.
Well, the thing is that. I don't know.
I drank way too much.
I mean, if you do that on enough people, eventually, like, the numbers are going
to
bear out.
Okay, from 1917 to 1926, he performed over 500 transplantations.
Jesus,
there you go.
He was doing the testicle thing.
So how many died?
Okay, stop the fucking podcast. That is the name of my next band. The testicle thing.
Testicle thing. He started using executed criminals' testicles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course he would.
And there's such a surplus of poor people back then.
Well,
wait, now.
But no, that's why they ran out.
But so, no!
They ran out. Yeah,
so the success rate was not good.
Okay,
Frankenstein.
No, the criminals ran out, and so he had to start using chimpanzees.
Oh, okay.
Same thing. Yeah, same thing.
So, I mean, it is an analog, I guess, but like...
So there were people paying big bucks... Okay, so the testicle is a gland that provides virility.
It's a serious gland.
And it's going to revive you. It's going to give you the energy again. It's going to make you live longer. Yeah. It's like starting over.
Because he was about rejuvenation, right?
Yeah, that's totally what... Not necessarily even just sexually, but
long life.
Yeah.
But mostly sexually.
Well, I'm sure that tons of people were looking at it that way. And it seems to me... pretty clear that that's the way this drink
was. Yeah, I could see it as like, hey girl, I got that monkey gland.
Yeah.
Go, Katy Perry, go.
You know, I did like kind of just poke around and look at different articles, and he was like, people were super hot on this idea. Like, they were like the famous physician.
In 1920, he was just taking slices of monkey testicles and implanting them into men's scrotums. And it seemed like that worked.
There was also...
I mean, people weren't dying. That's the thing.
That's a pretty fucking low bar. Yeah.
No, you're right.
Did you die? Then you're welcome.
Yeah. In 1923, he was applauded in London by the world's leading surgeons. You are
so virile.
I mean, how do you prove that, though? I guess... Okay. You didn't die. But, like, I'm thinking of what he's trying to prove and what he's trying to do is saying, like, if I do this, you're going to live longer.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to fucking prove that.
Like, at all. What's the litmus test?
If he was saying it's for virility, you could say, like, I mean, there was another guy, and this guy was actually, like, we talked about this before, because when you first mentioned him, I was like, oh, was this guy that was implanting goat balls into people? And it turned out that it was a totally different person. There was another guy that was doing the same thing. This guy actually was a doctor. The other guy was... He had, like, scammed his way through medical school. He didn't, like... He went for, like, a week, and then he was like, fuck this. I'm just gonna say I'm a doctor. And
he was like, H.H. Holmes? He was like, hey, I'm just gonna...
You want some balls? Not even, like... He was just like, I'm gonna cut open your sack, and I'm gonna shove shove a goat ball in there.
Maybe.
And then sew it back up, and that'll help you, you know, you'll be more virile. And people were also going crazy for it. They were like, yeah, it totally works. It's like, you gave it to some farmer in, like, you know, the middle of nowhere, and you're like, it totally works. But that guy was a serious quack. He was trying to insert things everywhere. He was like, I don't know, just open it up and shove something in. Get more goat balls. We need more goat balls.
Yeah, I don't know. To me, that sounds like a guy that owns a bunch of casinos running for president.
Right. But
they were the best goat
balls. Just me getting
just keep than gambling.
Else. What do I know?
Claims that he's making it was sort of amazing that people were like, this guy is on to something. It's like, you haven't proved anything yet. Like,
if you read his book, he says that he has all of this proof of how it works on the test subjects that were goats. You had really old goats who were sick and dying and failing in their health, who received the procedure and then were rejuvenated, fathered many more lambs. So according to his science, his peer-reviewed science... Because I read the book, and in the back it talked, he had all of these endnotes.
Oh, yeah,
no,
the other scientists were, like, backing him up. They're like, yeah, this totally works.
Like I said, in 1923, he was applauded in London by the world's leading surgeons. He treated thousands of people throughout the 1920s and was very wealthy. So, like...
Okay, so wait, let's stop.
So this is the interesting thing, is that, like... And this is why, like, when you were talking about the time period, it's right when this is kicking off.
Yeah.
So, like, this is becoming a big thing, and then a cocktail is being named after it.
But I think the time... See, I tried to look into this.
And so, it's in Paris!
So, if it's 1919 that this drink is created, I think it said that he hadn't done his, like, an official surgery in this way until 1920. Like, he was doing tests before that, but it wasn't until 1920 where he had actually, like... done one of his first actual surgeries.
Well, he had done thyroid surgeries. But on like, children and
but
stuff.
But like the monkey gland.
The testicle thing happened.
And so like he was testing it before then. So that
on
means,
goats.
That means that it was still even a story before it was an official thing. So that's what made me wonder, was like Harry going, this is fucking weird. We gotta make a weird ass drink because you hear what this guy's doing?
But then he became one of the rich people in Paris.
No, I know.
But the X Factor being like the absinthe, like the dash, you know, like
well,
the,
that's where
the X Factor, you
this
know?
This is, I think this is connected to the Corpse Survivor because one of the Corpse Survivors also has absinthe. And so, like, I think that people were
what
drawing
what did
that
absinthe
connection.
Mean to them?
I think that that's what I'm saying. I think that it was drawing that connection of it being a reviving kind of thing, like cocaine,
an elixir, yeah, something
like cocaine.
That was
this is why boost. Artists were doing this, yeah. Right? This is why they were
Vive.
Sitting around drinking their wormwood liqueur,
yeah.
Because it was inspiring their minds.
Right,
it was reviving them. It was
channel the muse.
So, like,
I mean, that seems the most logical explanation for why they wouldn't name the drink. But I'm just thinking about the timeline. Is that if when Harry creates the drink, let's say it's probably 1919, he creates the drink at that point in time. Was he like the world famous guy who's done this, or was that later that he became the world famous guy who was doing
this? I think
this
that he wrote the book like around night because he was doing research in 1917. He got the money to do the research right. in 1917. So like 1917, 1918 is probably when he wrote the book showing his results.
I mean, it fits within the timeline. It's just like.
It seems a little short term.
Why would a bartender... Right. I mean, that's what I'm trying to, like... I guess if it were me, I mean, the way we're discussing and laughing about it is, like, if that were me and I heard somebody was doing this, I'd be like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
That's insane.
No, but see, like, that's the thing, though, is that...
It's a libation.
And this
it
is kind of...
Allows you.
Let's do this.
Mm-hmm. This is kind of what I'm talking about, though, with... He is a professional. And we believe... the professionals.
Science.
Yeah. And I don't think he was being a quack. I think
no,
that he really
no,
believed.
No,
I mean, that's what's funny about that whole time period is that it wasn't quackery. It was the scientific method. Do I sew some balls into X and what happened?
Yeah.
That's what it is. Like, that's if you're following the method, do it.
And I don't blame the people at all for because they're like our best scientists, our best surgeons are supporting this work.
We are.
So, anyway... He was discredited in the 1940s.
Discredited? That sucks.
Yeah. There were some guys, there were some doctors who were like, this is bunk. And,
yeah, a few people had questions.
Yeah.
Like, what's with the hamster balls?
Or like, show me somebody who lived longer.
Yeah.
Or
like, if somebody did
how do you know
like,
that they were rejuvenated?
Right.
I mean, people would get it and then be like, oh my God, I feel great. Okay. So all you have to go on is how they feel.
Yeah.
Do you tell me on a scale of 1 to 10?
Right.
I mean, it's like the pain scale. How good is that? I mean, really? And you just had the procedure. You just paid thousands of dollars to get this done.
Of course,
you're
gonna feel better.
If you feel like shit, you'd be like, you'd feel like a sucker.
You'd have buyer's remorse. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like placebo's a thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that that's what.
That's a good point. I mean, like you wouldn't want to. Whether it was working or not is irrelevant because if you. The way he was getting the results are faulty in the way the data was being
and there's
collected.
No way to prove it
right you
now,
that's what
now,
I'm saying like you can't
now my question is whether the claims he made about the goats was accurate or whether he was
that I would buy more if
yards.
It was like I you know took these young you know male sheep balls and I put it in this ram that's an old ram. And it had an effect. I could see that. It's the same species. Maybe it's just kicking in, like, an extra whatever thyroid.
To be honest, I was just kind of flabbergasted by the fact that people were doing all that cutting back in 1917.
But I guess, okay, so to take it back to my point was, is that that's how we got here. If you look at a lot of those Da Vinci folios, he was cutting up dead people mm-hmm. to find out how the tubes worked. How did the musculature work?
Mm-hmm.
How did the skeleton work?
Mm-hmm.
And to us, that seems weird. But to him, it was unveiling the mystery. That was the machine of the human body. So for us to say cutting off balls and grafting them to other balls in other places is weird, but that's because we live in 2017.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I think that they were doing what they knew how to do.
Yeah.
They were seeing processes.
Trying. That's the scientific method.
And the people who were buying the process or who were buying the service
were rich.
And believing the scientists who were at the top of their game, and that was the top of the game at the time.
Placebo works 50% of the time.
Yeah. So,
God damn it, though. Like, you were saying, like, people, you were, like, flabbergasted at like, them cutting and, like, being able to connect it back together. But, like, to me, it's like that people were like, yeah, shit, cut me open and shove something
inside. Yeah, no, let's try it out. No.
Why not?
Are you kidding me?
1970.
We do that now.
Yeah, we do.
How much do people spend for boner pills?
Yeah, we really do.
We don't even have to go there. How about just the idea that, you know, that a transplant, a hip transplant is going to work, mm-hmm. or that, you know, a pig heart or a pig valve is going to...
No, I get that now.
We do the same thing. We're like, okay, well, you're the expert. You tell me what's going to save my life.
Look at all the fucking side effects.
I guess, but yeah, like...
I got a fucking working dick, but I have a tail. So, like, yay. You know, I can't even use that tail in my sexual experience.
I don't know. That's a win-win.
Yeah, right?
Exactly. I think we should contact Science Guy.
Let's do it.
Because I want to know about what he thinks of what this guy was doing. If there's actually any practical... I mean,
he's just going to say gross.
Hello, Darren.
Hello, all.
So I hope we're not taking you away from anything really important. What's going on?
Well, no, I'm actually in transit right now. It's no big deal. I'm just on the train on the way to Budapest.
What are you doing? Where are you going? What's the plan there?
I wish I could tell you. It's kind of a Dan Brown, Angels and Demons kind of thing.
Classified. I knew it was secret. I could tell.
Okay.
Classic Darren.
Okay, well, we won't press any further. However, we do want to know a little bit about this character, Sergei Voronoff, and his experiments where he was transplanting glands and trying to make people live longer by putting monkey testicles in people.
Yeah, it sounds like something you'd see in a kind of a sci-fi film, doesn't it? But it was a true story. He really did these things, and he's not the only one. He just gained fame. He was maybe a better marketer than his peers, but yeah. Surgeons were doing all kinds of crazy things at this time.
They were able to do that, those kinds of really intense transplants? I was really surprised about that.
If you have a willing subject and you know a little bit about anatomy, you can do weird things. They won't necessarily work or give you the results you're hoping for. But, I mean, nowadays we have ethics boards that prevent doctors from just trying, you know, hey, let's sew a guinea pig to a dog and see what happens, which is something he did, apparently.
So what do you think about his methodologies? Or he seemed rather methodical.
Yeah, and from what I've gleaned, he seemed like he was a decent surgeon. He did know a little bit about, you know, anatomy, and he understood that apes were, and the reason he used monkeys and chimpanzees and apes was because they were evolutionarily similar to humans. So at least he had that going for him. But he fell short in some major ways here. Endocrinology, the study of glands, is super complicated. I mean, glands are still in some ways poorly understood at best, and they're pretty tricky how they work. I think the big problem he had was he worked under the assumption that if a little was good, a lot would be better. And so if you just gave someone an extra gland, then that would
be... That's the American way.
Right. When really, you know, hormones and glands work on sort of a, what I call the Goldilocks principle, right? There's just the right amount, and too much is bad and too little is bad. I think his greatest success was taking a couple of kids who had hypothyroid or diminished activity in their thyroid and transplant in ape thyroid tissue, and that could replace the missing tissue, but it wouldn't work in you and me if we had normal tissue, because then you'd just be too much thyroid, and that would be a bad thing.
Oh.
You guys see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's very delicate.
So they had faulty thyroid glands, and by replacing them, it just replaced the amount. So his procedure is putting an extra testicle in to people was going to be too much or something.
Well, not only is it too much, but he had a huge misconception about what the testes did. He was basing it on the idea that, you know, if he knew that, and we knew since ancient Rome, if you castrate a guy, they're not, like, as strong and virile as other men. And so the theory is, well, if you just... The testes must be giving you something that you need. I mean, people have been eating testicles of different animals for millennia thinking, oh, this is going to make me strong like bull. But it doesn't work like that. Just having extra testes doesn't, you know, make you...
And they're really chewy, you know?
I mean, he was trying to find, you know, a cure for old age and to prevent men from deteriorating. And, you know, testes do great when it comes to, you know, your love life, but not necessarily anything else, so...
Okay.
Just having an extra testicle isn't going to make you feel better and...
Ah, damn it. I had that procedure done, nothing.
So how about the idea of just adding slices of testicles? I mean, that was something he did. Slices of glands. Slicicles. Would that could that be useful?
Yeah, so take one useless thing and divide it up.
It could be. I mean, glandular tissue, it doesn't have a whole lot of structure in like other organs. So, you know, a slice of it's just as good as a chunk of it is just as good as a whole organ in some ways.
Really? That is amazing. It's not like a structure that needs all of its parts?
No, in fact, they're putting in diabetics, they're putting in, you know, hunks of pancreas in different places and finding that you know, they can get some insulin produced.
Whoa. I didn't know this. So on some levels, like, some of his work actually had some merit.
Yeah, although when you look at the Royal Society of London, what they said about his work, they basically said he's a snake oil salesman and they shut him down. But he tried things that we wouldn't have tried. He sort of opened doors that way. So I guess he was a pioneer in some ways. Now, one thing I can definitely say about him, because he tried all these transplants and even transplants from various animals into humans, he became an early advocate for organ donation. In fact, he said, you know, if it weren't for religion and laws telling us we need to bury corpses and let all this good tissue go to waste, we could save all these organs and use them to improve people's lives. He sort of was ahead of his time in that regard and saying, hey, these organs are valuable. We can take them out of someone and put them in someone else, and they'll still work. So I guess, you know, if you want a silver lining,
the beauty.
Sign your organ donor's cards, kids.
Wow, okay. I learned a lot just talking to you just now, because I didn't know that some of these structures weren't as complex. It sounds like you can just take, like, a scoop, an ice cream scoop, and get some pancreas and just slop it in there, and it's going to function okay.
The real trick isn't regulating, you know, turning things on and turning things off when they're supposed to, and having the right amount, not necessarily too much or too little.
Yeah. Wow. Hmm. This was very enlightening. Thanks for your time, and I hope your travels are safe and such.
Well, I hope to see you again soon, too.
Are you wearing pants?
What?
Are you wearing pants, though? That's the most important question.
Well, you know, it's Europe, so, you know, they have different...
Some more of a Jedi thing, like a robe with a utility belt?
If only. I wish I could rock that. But,
may the Force be with you.
May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Have a good one, man.
Bye, Darren.
Later, guys. Have fun.
It really is fascinating to me, though, because somebody had to do this thing. And that's why we're here now.
Yeah,
and what we think is strange now in...
You do computer programming, so you're trying weird stuff, right?
That's pretty magic to me.
Yeah, you're trying new programs, or at least nudging, right?
Not especially.
But you're nudging.
I would say the analog virtual, for the computer...
You change one thing, it changes everything,
The
right?
analog for the computer programmer is like the scribe in the Middle Ages.
Every day I teach people about like what we ended up with music notation, and it took a long fucking time to get there. And it's really fascinating how long it took to get there.
Well, and you're right. Programming took a long time. I mean, a lot of the algorithms that we learn were written 50 or 60 years ago.
But I find
they couldn't put them into practice because they didn't have the hardware
to do
it.
Beauty in that.
I'm pretty sure that AC/DC's Big Balls is after yeah. Far Enough.
That's I think that's what they were reading.
That song is awesome.
It is one of the
My
best
balls
songs
are ever. Always bouncing.
And
to the left and to the right.
Well, and I have heard that here at Monster in a Glass, we have the greatest balls of them all.
Yeah, we do.
You must dance.
So, you know what? I have heard from.
Are you all going to get pregnant?
That's I've heard from the Twitterverse little, that this
just
is
just a little pregnancy.
This is a nasty drink. Okay,
it,
so
it
like,
fucking disgusting.
In fact, David Wondrich wrote that after you make it, you should pour it down the sink because it's terrible.
Wow, I agree with that. I haven't tasted it, but I'm going to guess that that's what it is.
Some of my cocktail friends on Twitter have said, "Yeah, it's really gross." I don't
how
know
many
how
many bars
can...
have absinthe. Like, is that a thing now?
It's back. Okay. Full throttle. So, this is going to be an interesting show.
Well, there was one last thing there before we go to the tasting. I did find this weird thing where it was a suit about a monkey gland cocktail.
Another lawsuit story?
Another lawsuit. We end in these, it's always a lawsuit.
And that's the American way.
Basically, this guy was
cocktail
saying that
lawsuits.
It says, a Negro chef's recipe for a monkey gland cocktail enlivened testimony today in Mrs. Gladys Luckenbach's separate maintenance suit against Louis Luckenbach, steamship company executive. So basically what the article lays out is like, this dude got drunk on monkey gland cocktails, went into his cook's room and started patting her cheeks, was in quotation marks, and I was like, I don't...
Huh.
What's happening? Like, was he just patting her on the cheeks for real?
Or
and that was
cheeks.
Like faux pas in 1936?
Wait, was that... Were those her face cheeks?
Right, that's what I don't know. It was in quotation marks, and I was like... That sounds like assault, brother. And so this dude went in there, but like his wife was just, I think it sounded like he was kind of, she was saying he was abusive or like, but it was unclear on like what way. So it was like, oh, okay, so monkey glands made him crazy. And then there was another article where it talking about the same guy.
Cheek patter.
It says, he gets offers, the guy's cook who made the drink, who's getting offers to make this drink for other people. And I was like, wait, so people were like, he started assaulting people after he had monkey cocktails. And they're like, can you
I'm sorry, this is Brass Monkey, dude. This is Brass Monkey. That funky, funky monkey.
But this kind of monkey?
That funky monkey.
Mix it in a cup.
Yo, baby, what's up?
What's up?
There was a... So this guy... The second article was called Monkey Gland Gin, Good for a Man with Four Wives. And I was like, he has four wives.
Whoa, that's
not
a lot of work.
Not one, not two,
no,
not three, not...
Four.
Yeah.
That's some work.
But then I kept finding articles, and basically what was happening was, it sounds like he was married four times... But they all divorced him because he was abusive. But they kept saying it was because of the monkey gland.
Because was he patting their cheeks?
He was patting somebody's cheeks.
Well, he clearly ruined a golden opportunity.
Right? Isn't that, right?
If there ever were a case of you just like not being thankful for what's been given to you,
right?
That's
got
that
three glands, honey. Yeah. Rock it.
Well, here's the final thing from the last article I found, which says Luckenbach was sued by his fourth wife in 1936 for a separation and was ordered to pay her $400 a month after she accused him of drinking monkey gland cocktails and forcing her to witness a lewd entertainment. I was like,
whoa.
This guy sounds like a piece of shit.
Wow.
He had four wives and they were all like, he can't stop drinking monkey gland cocktails and he goes crazy and he's doing weird things.
It's not me, baby. It's the monkey gland.
Right, I know. I think that was his defense. That's what it sounded like. He was like, I barely drink. I only drink like four or five monkey glands a day.
Crap.
And they were like, that's no excuse. Stop assaulting me.
I can only assume that his children are movie executives.
Yeah. All of them.
For sure.
It's the same movie.
Yeah. I do like that there are so many cocktails that result in lawsuits. As in, you might actually end up having to pour the drink down the drain, or you might end up patting people's cheeks.
Everyone will
cereal cheek padding.
Great.
At Ward 8.
But no matter what you do, no matter what cocktail you have, it's important that you respect women.
That's true.
Even their cheeks?
Keep your hands to yourself.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, fuck. I'm
saying don't drink this cocktail. It's probably not a good
idea. That seems like the
safest. Keep your goddamn monkey gland to yourself.
Yeah. One, it probably tastes disgusting, and if it you taste okay, it's going to make you a cereal cheek patter.
Seems legit.
Good night.
You found the man.
Okay, we're going to the bar.
The monkey gland. 1.5 ounces. Broker's dry gin. 1.5 ounces. Orange juice. 1 teaspoon. Grenadine. 1 teaspoon. North Shore absinthe.
And we're back. We are going to have monkey glands.
Woo!
Isn't that exciting?
For all your monkey sweat needs.
That's, yeah. Or monkey something needs. I'm here with the tasting team. We're having our cocktails mixed. I'm here with my good friend, Mr. Eric Martin.
Hello.
Eric, do you have a doctor, a personal physician?
I do, but I've never met him.
So that answers my next question about whether, you know, you see your doctor, and clearly you have no relationship, so there's no...
Sadly, no.
Actually, I can identify because, like, I run away from doctors as much as I possibly can as well. We're also here with Rachel Rubin.
Yes.
Rachel, do you have a personal physician?
I saw her once. I mean, I could see her again, and then I guess... That makes it a habit.
One time. Wow.
You're almost friends.
I was told that 3 makes a pattern. Okay. Well, I've seen her once, and she was a general practitioner, and she was nice. And okay. Then I got a tetanus shot.
To keep from pulverizing your bones from the inside?
Yes. Okay. So I don't get lockjaw.
After you see him 3 times, they have enough information to start judging you. So.
Yeah. Oh,
so then you have to switch?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm confused. Was the tetanus shot to keep the doctor away?
That's apples. Duh.
She made it sound positive.
No, it was just because I couldn't remember the last time I had one.
Huh. Okay.
It also protects from diphtheria.
Are you autistic now? Just checking.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, maybe there's a scale. Is there a test we can do?
There are tests. Online ones now.
I have so many offensive things I could say.
But you really need a trained person to run thorough examinations, to be sure.
Can I go back to my general practitioner?
Trying to self-diagnose psychological issues, if you read through, what is the...
It's like
the psychology bible?
The DSM.
Oh my gosh. Never read that because you think you have everything.
It's kind of like reading your star charts.
Yeah, it's...
It's like, oh, I'm that.
Exactly. It's like astrology for the brain.
And when I was doing my clinical...
Like WebMD.
When I was actually doing my clinical rotation and learning about all the different abnormal psychology, points of abnormal psychology, we were actually told, do not engage in this, do not read this too closely, and we were taken to task for anybody who did, because they knew that was the thing that beginning level psychologists run into. That was a problem.
Absolutely.
They run into.
Yeah. Every time I read the symptoms of anything, I'm like, oh, yep, all right, sign me up. Where do I get all the drugs? Because I have all these problems.
Doctor, do not heal thyself. Yeah. We're also here with Mr. Kevin Rotychek.
Hello.
And Kevin, do you have a personal physician that you see?
I do not have a doctor.
Jesus fucking Christ. We're all gonna die.
Nobody can afford to go to the doctor.
No, Rachel. I know, you're right.
Rachel, she's got her tetanus shot.
I don't have to go again for like...
She's golden.
Ten years, I'm done. I don't need anything, I'm good.
Yeah. We're also here with Nicole Pizzini.
Hello, hello.
And you, how about you and your relationship with your doctor?
Let's see. Ever since I got an IUD, I only have to go every 5 years instead of every 1 year. So... I was seeing a doctor every year because that was the only way you could get birth control. But you have to go get an exam every year in order to renew your prescription.
So the only reason you go to a doctor is nobody's gotten wildly sick or anything at all?
Well, you can't get into a doctor if you're sick. They'll see you in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. That's why you have all those emergency care clinics.
Well, but that's
not your
doctor, though.
Yeah. No, that's true.
My last experience going to urgent care was terrible, and I'll never go back to that place again.
And they're also really expensive.
Yeah. I just will not get tetanus, and I'll be fine.
Yeah, for my entire adult life, the only reason I've ever gone to a doctor is to renew that prescription.
Wow.
Yeah. Same.
And now that I have a much longer lasting one, I don't have to. Well, I should go in, but I don't have to. There's no deadline.
And we're also here with a healthcare consultant, Mr. Jays Ranville.
Hello.
And you must go to a doctor frequently.
My doctor is approaching her 13th regeneration. Thank you. Someone gets that.
Who is your doctor?
So my actual doctor
is getting cut. That is out of there. Oh
my actual doctor is David Tennant. It'll always be Ten. Ten is actually my doctor. But I am very, very excited for the 13th doctor. But to answer your question, yes, I do have a doctor. And I, as a former medical professional, probably am a little more tuned to some of this.
You probably have better health care than the rest of us do.
I have pretty good health care. You know, I'm a former clinician and somebody who has worked in healthcare for my entire career. So I'm like, whenever I hear people being like, yeah, do you need a doctor? I'm like, have you heard about rare diseases?
No.
I told you, I got my tetanus shot.
Yeah.
I'm done.
That's why we're not going to doctors.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, the question that I wanted to ask was, how much faith do you put in your doctor if your doctor says, do this, do you just do it? Do you feel confident in the white coat?
No. Especially after that last trip to urgent care.
So you know better than the doctor?
No, he said some terrible things, and then I went and saw an actual GP, and she contradicted everything he said with, actual common sense.
So maybe you only trust doctors, and you don't trust urgent care professionals.
He's a doctor.
Oh,
but
no.
Or did you just find a doctor who said what you wanted to hear?
No.
Because I... That's the thing that's the problem that we're having with this episode, and something that I was trying to hammer through was when I was talking in the first part was that Sergey Voronoff, the guy who created the monkey gland procedure, sewing a chimpanzee testicle into men's scrotums to revitalize them. Was,
hey, ladies, I've got three balls.
Yeah.
One's a little small.
Kind of redefines the idea of monkey sex.
Wait a minute. Are chimpanzee balls bigger or smaller than
human
balls?
Yeah, actually, I said it, and I was like, wait.
Probably bigger. Was he using monkeys or apes?
It was apes, because it was chimpanzee.
Well,
that's improperly made.
You're right, absolutely right.
Well, this should be the ape gland cocktail,
or
then.
The chimp gland.
Chimpland cocktail now really starts to sound very anatomical, like there's one in the drink. It's very specific.
This is turning into a lot of monkey business.
That's
business.
Getting cut too.
Leave it in.
Now I'm thinking of...
I mean, I could repeat some of the stories that we were talking about earlier, but I'd just be aping somebody.
They say it would take a million monkeys forever to write Shakespeare, but they would take 5 minutes to write those jokes.
I'm going to go get our cocktails. You guys run the show.
It's just a circus in here. It's just a circus.
The
chimp nut swizzle.
Well, now I'm thinking about a bunch of, like, impotent ape doctors on...
apes?
Impotent ape doctors on Planet of the Apes, like Dr. What's his name? Dr.
Zaius?
Yes.
That movie made no sense to me. Are those apes interbreeding? Do they give birth to different species apes every time?
Wait, isn't it bonobos that have sex for fun? Why weren't they using bonobo testicles?
This is a there good question.
Go. Maybe bonobos are not compatible. Although I don't know that, like, I don't know that any, like, trans... well, I guess some of it, yeah, because you can implant organs from some animals into humans.
Yeah.
And it works fine.
The pigs, yeah. So, like, yeah, I guess, never mind. But pigs are also remarkably close to humans.
Well, they're, like,
yeah,
similarly
sized.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say any closer than a chimp, though.
Yeah, I mean, chimps and bonobos are cousins to each other. And so I think they're about the same relationship to us as each other.
Are bonobos a matriarchal society? Maybe that's why the doctors didn't like them.
Oh, well, maybe.
Actually, I think they are, dude. I think they are. Regular chimps, it's not. And then bonobos, it is.
See, those men in the bonobo society were emasculated, according to those doctors. So
even though they were fucking all the time.
Those are not good.
The male bonobo
including each other.
Yes.
Yeah. According to that logic, the male bonobos were emasculated because they were in a matriarchal society. So,
also,
doctors helped them by removing one of their testicles?
No, they wouldn't take their testicles because not only were they in a matriarchal society, they were blowing each other.
It's actually interesting that you bring up the gender thing, because there was a case that Voronoff was working with where there was a young boy who needed to have a thyroid gland replaced, and he was looking for a donor, and, you know, he was looking primarily for the male donors in the family, uncles, fathers, grandfathers. The mother was available, and she was perfectly fine. She could have donated one, but he was thinking that female constitution wasn't as strong, and so it wouldn't work as well.
And then
this doctor had obviously never seen a woman give birth.
And then when
he wasn't paying attention. You know,
okay.
Just like, you know.
And then when they went into the surgical bay, the doctor said, "I cannot operate on this boy because he is my son."
Yes. But I mean, it's just one of those things that, I don't know, I feel like it exemplifies this idea where he was at the top of his game back in that day. And, like, he made thousands of dollars doing this procedure, and people were buying it because he was a known professional. And only later did other scientists start to think of this as quackery. But he did research, he did studies on goats. He claimed to get these results where aged rams were once again revitalized, their horns were growing again, their fur was growing again. At the end of the day, you just have to believe it. Because if he didn't do it properly, how would I know? He wrote it, it looked proper. His hypotheses, his assumptions were woefully inaccurate, but the work he did seemed accurate. So as a reader, I had no way of knowing whether he falsified it.
Right, but see, this is
why you have peer review, so that other people can test your methods.
They did. It was peer review.
Yeah, they all thought he was
smart.
But
so other people also put extra testicles in goats?
Yeah, he wasn't the only one.
It was going on. Yeah.
Poor goats.
I know.
This is why, I guess, to go into your point, though, like, when you look at modern medicine, this is why you should be skeptical of a doctor, or any medical researcher, I suppose, that tells you something will do something. You know, a good medical professional is going to couch everything in the language of that kind of research, which is, as far as we know, or what we can tell, is this seems to work this way. And that's not just because doctors are trying to hem and haw around you, it's because there is always that possibility. You know, there are doctors in the 1960s who are getting paid to record advertisements for cigarette smoke saying, "I smoke this brand because I have studied it and it's shown that it's less bad for you than the opposing brand."
Yep, exactly.
You know, and there's reasons why doctors don't do that kind of stuff anymore. If they do, they don't tend to have their licenses for very long.
Well, and you're promising a return to youth. Like, that's something that mankind has been seeking for eternity. And who's going to say, "Oh, yeah, I went through this procedure, but I think it was a waste."
Yeah, I know, exactly. I just spent $4,000 having a monkey testicle shoved into my body, and
shoved.
Was
there a lot of shoving?
No, it was.
Well, I mean, actually, the interesting thing is,
was it a fight? I don't understand.
Stay still.
Usually, there's anesthesia and it's just an incision, but I mean.
It's interesting because, as I understand it, glandular tissue, like, he was even just putting slices of testicles in. So, like, not even whole balls in some cases.
Ball tartare.
Yeah.
Testicle sashimi. Yeah.
Apparently, that works. Like, if you introduce glandular tissue to the body, it will respond.
Oh, so he was right then.
Apparently. I mean, to say whether he knew what he was doing or it just kind of happened, I don't know. But he was creating an incision, putting the foreign tissue into the men's scrotums and then sealing it up, and apparently that was...
Did they connect it to, like, blood vessels or anything to keep the tissue alive, or did they just kind of stick it in?
Otherwise, it would be desiccated.
Right, otherwise I feel like it would just kind of turn into, like, this, like, decaying foreign thing
in the body. What I don't understand is were they connecting all the tubes, for lack of a better, you know, the
yeah.
From what Darren was saying and the science guy, it sounds like no. When it comes to things like glands like that,
those tubes are pretty fine. Do they maybe
it doesn't really matter the location that much.
Because it just needs, like, to grab the hormones from it? It doesn't need to actually...
Yeah, something like that. I mean, Darren does a really, you know, nice job explaining. And he's saying, like, with pancreas, too. Like, you can have a scoop of pancreas, and you just have that,
There are instances where hormones from animals will affect humans in a certain way. Like, hormone-free milk is a thing for that reason. So it makes... sense to me as a layperson.
Especially a lot of the, like, glandular tissue is meant to adapt to what's going on around it. So,
yeah, I mean,
it does make sense that you can introduce new tissue and expect to see some kind of reaction.
And not to bring IUDs up again, but I literally have some slices of hormones in my body right now, and they're having an effect.
Yours is there, mine's in my arm. Yeah.
Okay.
We are this technology today.
Makes you kind of a cyborg.
Except they're plastic.
They're not plastic from cyborg.
They're not slices of animals stuck in your body.
No, but that's the only difference, is the source has changed.
So it sounds like we're kind of flipping on this to some extent.
I mean, he sounds like a douche, but he might have been right.
He was onto something.
It's like any new
technology. You try it, and you refine it.
Eric, the funny thing is, did you check out the history on it? Did you hear that part?
No.
The one cool thing about that that he's very not douche-like at all about was the whole organ donor thing.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, you think about it. Of course he wanted people to donate organs because he could make thousands of dollars off of it. But
the way he worded it was...
I know, but
it was nice.
Yeah, absolutely. He was a proponent of organ donation way ahead of everybody else because he saw the value in it, and he's like, you know, all of this God stuff and burial and, you know, so it's wasting valuable tissue.
Yeah. So he's an early capitalist. He saw the proponent of organ donation not to keep people moving and not to keep life preserved, but to make a buck.
I think that was his motivation, but nevertheless, it got that rolling.
That's,
you know.
Goes to show people are complex. They can have good and bad traits.
And sometimes people do bad things and cause good things to happen.
I'm very interested, and I didn't think about this when I was listening to the history, but you're exactly right. Basically what he's doing is he's introducing, like, extra male testosterone, extra hormones into a body, and we now have plastic things inside of us that do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
But with different results.
Yeah, different, yeah. And, I mean, you have all kinds of people who are, like, transitioning, mm-hmm. who are taking hormones, and they're having an effect. So, I mean, this technology is still happening. We're just...
not shoving monkey balls in the scrotums.
We're just not... It's not as crude. It's not seeming as...
Again, I want to come back to shoving.
It's a forceful procedure.
I think, generally, if a scrotum is being shoved into you... most often, it's non-consensual.
Scrotum's going to be shoved
into you.
I feel like being shoved into scrotums.
That is
yeah,
such
yeah, that's a better way to put it around.
Tesla's being shoved into a scrotum.
That
probably
is such a difficult thing to do. I feel like you'd have to plan ahead.
I think it all involves monetary, you know, compensation for the shover, really.
For the shover. Not the shovey.
I think the shovey.
No, the shovey's paying for it.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Oh, really?
I see what you're saying. It's a service requested.
Yes.
I see.
Whether you're getting jollies or monkey balls or...
or Rocky Mountain oysters.
Oh, Rocky Mountain. You know what? I have to be honest. This conversation has given me so many new Twitter handles to create.
So we just received our cocktails, and Jason has delivered them. Jason,
Yes. Can
you tell us what ingredients you used in these?
So the monkey gland, it's fresh orange juice. Use a broker's dry gin in it. Use North Shore absinthe, and we have our house-made grenadine pomegranate.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, man.
It smells like licorice.
So is this around the time that they were making electric vibrators to cure women of hysteria?
That I'm not...
This is delicious.
Are you serious?
Super good. If you like black licorice, you may like it. Usually, absinthe is very burning, and the juice takes all that away.
It works well with the orange?
It works well with the orange.
Strangely, it does.
It's almost like it's got the bite of licorice, but it doesn't have the bitterness.
No, it doesn't. It's peculiar.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Similar to fennel orange salad.
Yeah.
You got the fennel and the orange, obviously.
That is way better, Jason. I thought it was good.
And it's bright and fresh and very good.
Yeah, the sweetness of that juice really helps balance out what was usually a harshness of the anise. It tastes like a licorice candy.
Like a smoother, less bitter, less bitey version.
I approve. It's good. It doesn't taste toothpaste-y, which was what I was anticipating.
And I'm not even getting a lot of orange juice generally.
No.
Like, I get the sweetness from it, but not the sour, not the...
I think
it also helps that this orange juice is fresh and very low acidity.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Holy shit, that's awesome.
This is one of the better drinks we've had this year.
Yeah.
Ladies win again.
Woohoo!
Congrats, ladies.
Everyone having it in the club.
In the club.
Wait a minute.
In the
club.
In the monkey
insights.
Club.
Go
in
for
the
it.
Women's club.
I wonder if women were ordering the monkey glands on their dates as a hint.
Yes.
That's
right.
See,
like, you know what we need a little bit more of over here?
Testicle?
Yeah.
That's actually, that's a different angle.
Honey, I got some monkey gland. You should get some, too.
See, this is opening
Let's
up.
Let's go cut your sack open.
This is opening up an entire line of discussion that I did not want to get into, which is when I found out we were going to have a drink called the monkey gland. You know, at first I was thinking of nothing but, like, pituitary glands, which was conjuring up all these, like, gross anatomy classes that I had.
Yes.
And then I was just thinking of, like, this is just going to turn into a bunch of dick jokes. Like, it's not going to take that long before we get there, and I'm just really happy we've made it.
Yeah.
To be fair, we haven't said anything about shafts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I don't think penises have come up.
Oh, that was a hard pun.
So this is fresh squeezed orange juice. They make the oranges here.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
I think that's partially why it's so good.
Yeah.
To be fair, like, if you use Minute Maid at home, it's not going to taste half.
Yeah, I can't imagine this going good with Sunny Delight.
No.
And I like boxed orange juice too. Like, for a long time. Like, when I was growing up, like, I did not drink orange juice because I think it was just, like, too acidic. Like, there's something when orange juice sits for a long time, or, like, something when they put the additives in it, like, it's just not great. It's just too acidic. Something's not good. Fresh squeezed orange juice is, like, a whole different thing.
Programming note for Florida advertisers. We are accepting promotions. We're here. We can be... Sponsors are open.
Yeah.
if you are making this at home and you don't want to juice your own oranges, they do fresh squeeze them at a lot of grocery stores.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is much better to get a bottle there than to buy the.
Are you talking about those bottles you see in the produce section?
Yep.
That are like all like cloudy and
yeah, they're usually separated.
You can buy those, but some grocery stores now have machines where you can watch it being made.
Ooh, fancy.
So that is the route I would go if you are so inclined. If you don't care that much about orange juice, you probably won't notice the difference anyway.
The one time recently I did buy boxed orange juice is when Jewel was running a special where if you bought two bottles of like Barefoot champagne, you got a box of Minute Maid for a penny.
That's a good promotion.
Mimosa kit.
Yeah, man.
Mimosa kit. Take that to a BYO brunch.
Excellent marketing.
Yeah, it was
excellent
great.
Marketing.
We didn't drink them in the morning though. Even though champagne makes it an anytime drink. Well, actually, yes, champagne makes it an anytime drink, so we drank them at night while we played board games. But yeah, this is way better.
It has such a nice, fresh flavor. I think it would be great with spinach salad, something with a lot of very good ripe tomatoes.
Your orange and fennel salad comparison was perfect.
Basil also has some light anise notes, so anything that goes well with basil would probably go well with that.
I was actually thinking this would, and maybe this is my own background, but I actually was thinking this would be a good drink to serve at a holiday party.
Oh yeah,
because of the orange, because it is kind of bright, but it is sweet. I could see a lot of people enjoying it, and a lot of people would be able to palate it. So.
And you want to make up for the year of crappy corporate crap you've thrown at your employees.
It's true. Yeah.
Our holiday party is in a week. I don't know why. It's in March.
It's a German thing.
I'm sure it's not. Germans fucking love Christmas.
It's in the Ides of March. They're celebrating the death of Caesar.
It is on the Ides of March. We were making jokes about that. Yeah.
Are you sure? Are you sure your company isn't really Greek?
I'm sure.
The Germans would celebrate the death of Caesar.
Reading the Odyssey right now, Odysseus just poked out the eyeball of the Cyclops. Cyclops is wicked pissed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really not happy about it.
No. I really empathize with the Cyclops in that moment.
Yeah, he's got one eye, now it's gone.
Yeah, and you know the context in which he starts killing Odysseus and his men? They're like hiding out in the Cyclops cave, knowing he's going to come back, so they can ask him for presents. That's literally, like, that is the translation. It's like, yeah, so I decided we'd go hang out in this cave and wait for him to come back and then demand gifts. Like, yeah, he's gonna fucking kill you.
I'm not sure why you're looking for logic in this. You're talking about a story about a guy who went off to war, and even though it was in one little sea, still took him 19 years to figure out how to get back.
Well, half of that is because the Cyclops was Odyssean. Nope. That's Poseidon and Odysseus. This is love child.
The short answer is Poseidon is a giant dick.
Well, no. Poseidon was the dad of the Cyclops. Yeah.
Yeah, Odysseus
was
kind
of a dick
too.
Yeah, so maybe don't blind my kids and I'll let you go home.
Everyone in mythology is a giant dick. Yeah. Except for the women who got raped by swans. I feel for them.
Yeah. Not great. Don't. Did you know that swans are actually among some of like the deadliest creatures for humans?
Oh, terrifying. My undergraduate school had two swans that they like stocked in the one little pond next to the freshman dorms. And the swan... No. Vicious.
Yeah, you don't mess with those.
Vicious.
You don't mess with them. They're mean.
I'll put it this way. One day, a woman was walking her dog, and one of the dogs attacked the swan and killed it. And the students were cheering for the dog. They 100% were on the camp of the dog.
Wow.
I mean, swans are descended from dinosaurs, so they come by it honestly.
Do they have corkscrew penises like ducks do? Because now I really feel sorry for those ladies.
Oh.
Ducks are rapey.
Ducks are rapey.
They're really rapey. They are.
Maybe swans are too. Well, we know they're no. We know they are.
Because they're from dinosaurs.
No, because in the story,
in Greek myth.
In the Greek myth.
That's the grain of truth. A woman was accosted by an overly friendly is not the right word.
Aggressive.
Aggressive swan.
Overly enthusiastic.
Overly sexually aggressive swan.
Yes.
What's an underly sexually aggressive swan?
That's a good question.
She's like, it must have been Zeus.
On another occasion, he came as a golden shower, though. So.
Of coins. Which isn't better, but still.
Ow, those are heavy. They would really
gold is heavy.
Cleanup's better.
I would not make this into a punch.
This is not punch worthy.
No,
it's too strong to be a punch. I think.
Yeah.
It's too.
You don't want four glasses of this.
No, I don't think you want four
I
glasses.
I do.
It's good.
It's good.
It's very good.
I want a Boda bag of gland.
I kind of want this as like a lozenge.
Yeah.
It does have a little bit of a Ricola bit to it.
There's lemon honey
Ricola.
There's something about it where if like I walked up to a punch bowl and got this out of a punch bowl, I'd be like, I was not expecting that. It seems like, you know, punch is kind of like you expect something from it.
Pineapple flavors.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is a little bit too unexpected for a punch.
Next time I'm craving this, I'm going to go buy some Australian black licorice.
If you're a college student or someone who can't get absinthe, you just make a screwdriver and sip it through a Twizzler.
Yeah. Black Twizzler.
Licorice Twizzler.
Gin.
With the ends bitten off.
Yeah. Cam, next episode we should set that up and see if it compares.
Have you done that before? Used
yes,
a Twizzler as a straw?
No.
I've used a peppermint stick as a straw for orange juice.
I've used a Twizzler as a straw for like.
It wasn't my
soda.
Yeah, I have too.
Yeah.
And it works rather nicely.
Someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it gets all hard because it's cold.
Yeah, but it still transfers the flavor to the. Yeah.
It works well.
Yeah, it does. It's surprising.
My grandmother let us do that because she hated my mom.
That's a unique way of getting even with your child.
Most grandmas just give the kids Play-Doh.
You know, she never did that. I don't know if she was on to that game. No.
She's just, upper game.
Yeah, she just would wind us up and then give us back.
Okay, so does anybody else have any insights about the drink? Anything else you want to share?
Ladies just love it. Give your man a hint.
Need more ladies' clubs.
Yeah. Do more research on ladies' clubs. I want to hear more about those. Is this like a sewing circle type situation?
If there's like a club where I can like go to a fancy building and like drink with a bunch of ladies, like sign me up.
All of these old school like ladies' activities make me really wish I was an old school lady because they sound like a lot of fun.
I can say legitimately, I've been wanting since last year to create a like women only bar, which would basically be a lesbian bar, but look, whatever. No one's asking. Essentially a bar for women only and call it Themyscira. And this would absolutely be a good drink to be serving in Themyscira.
How'd you name it? I would rename the monkey glands.
What would you name it to?
I don't know, chip balls or something.
You're right. That changes things.
The bonobo.
The bonobo.
The bonobo.
I would absolutely rename it the bonobo.
Yeah, that'd be much better.
And then people would be going, I'll have a bonobo?
A bonobo.
That's fine.
Maybe your menu can have pronunciation guides next to it. Yeah. I'll write them.
Yeah, man. I'd go to your lesbian bar and then order drinks named after matriarchal societies of monkeys that have sex for fun. Sounds good.
Sounds like a concept bar to me.
You can go next to my bakery. Yeast confection.
Yes.
I'd go there too.
We'll talk later.
So we've had the drink, and it is a delicious drink. It surprised the fuck out of us because, I mean, we all thought that it was going to be really gross. But this is good. This is a good drink. Everybody agrees. I kind of don't want to tell people to make it at home because I'm afraid that, you know, like it's like fugu or something. You know, you get it wrong and you might die. That's why we come here to Ward 8 because, you know, they're going to make it right.
I do think that it is worth saying that there is a premium on this in terms of having the right quality of ingredients.
Yeah.
Like as Rachel was saying, if you're mixing this with Minute Maid and, you know, I don't know, whatever else. Like, I don't know.
What's going to
licorice Kool-Aid.
Yeah, licorice Kool-Aid and grenadine.
Yeah.
And Minute Maid is probably not gonna. You're probably not gonna taste it and think, this is good.
I really do want a side by side of this cocktail and Minute Maid with the licorice straw.
See, we're gonna have comments on the podcast on like iTunes now. I'll be like, I made that monkey gland, but I didn't have any absinthe, so I substituted like cough drops, and I didn't have any fresh squeezed orange juice, so I grabbed some Sunny Delight, and this cocktail was disgusting. 0 stars.
Yeah, well, fuck them.
We await your hate mail.
Yeah.
Send those letters.
And while you're at it, go ahead and send us a 5-star review on iTunes. Because you clearly listened to the end of this thing, so... Yeah, it's got to be worth something. If you want to support us financially, you can go to our Patreon page and kick us some money or donate on a PayPal. Because this is all for fun and it's listener-supported, so... Subscribe, give us a review, and if you can, please donate. Because we're going to keep going anyway. It's a good show, it's fun, and we're learning a lot along the way. And it's just getting better every time, so...
You're stuck with us anyway, so you might as well pay for it.
Yeah. So... Yeah, you can't not listen now.
We have 3 children together, god damn it.
Keep on thinking and drinking. Until next time, bye now.
And so she was.
Thank you for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I would like to thank Jason Cruz and Mick Lehman for unraveling the history in the front part of the show, the regular tasting team Kevin Rtajcek, Rachel Rubin, Nicole Pizzini, and Eric Martin for joining me in the grueling task of sampling each cocktail we discuss, and a special thanks to the skilled bartenders at Ward 8 in Evanston, Illinois for taming the cocktail monsters we enjoy. I would also like to thank Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic, and give us an awesome rating and tell us what you think while you're at it. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, come blacken your liver with us.